vision, or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Donald, and for the next hour, I will be reading from the May 22nd issue of the Wall Street Journal and the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Musk set to keep firm control of SpaceX after it goes public. Supervoting shares, Texas law make it difficult to fire CEO, limit investor suits, by Becky Peterson. Elon Musk holds so much power at SpaceX that it is nearly impossible to fire him or make other significant corporate changes without his support. This isn't going to change the investors in the company's initial public offering. Musk will have a near unprecedented level of control at a public company of its valuation, which is expected to reach at least $1.5 trillion after a stock sale. The SpaceX founder, who serves as chairman, chief executive, and chief technical officer, controls about 85% of the voting power at the satellite builder, rocket launch provider, and artificial intelligence developer. The structure remedies some of the problems that Musk has faced running Tesla. In his 16 years on Wall Street, the electric vehicle maker has been a lightning rod for shareholder lawsuits and activist calls for Musk dismissal. The executive has complained at times that he dislikes running a public company. SpaceX ownership structure gives different rights to various groups of investors. Musk and other company insiders hold some Class B shares, which allow 10 votes for every share owned, according to a securities filing on Wednesday. Individual investors will be able to buy Class A shares, which have just one vote apiece. Google and Facebook both put in place super voting shares before they went public, granting their founders a level of outsized control. In both cases, shareholders had other ways to take action. They could sue in state court in Delaware, where the companies were incorporated, or sell their shares. In this case, SpaceX, however, there are restrictions that could make it virtually impossible for most shareholders to sue the company. The first is a provision allowed under state law, Texas, where SpaceX is legally based, which prevents lawsuits from shareholders to collectively representing less than 3% of the stock issued. The second is an arbitration requirement that restricts investors from banding together to file class action suits. They're essentially closing off every possible avenue for shareholders to have any influence at all, said Ann Lipton, a law professor at the University of Colorado Boulder. In the filing, SpaceX made its case for keeping Musk happy. Mr. Musk has been and continues to be a driving force behind our growth, innovation, and operational success, the company wrote in its investor prospectus. Issue over class. When Tesla went public in 2010, it issued a single class of stock with one vote per share owned. That structure has led to colorful campaigns to sway institutional and retail shareholders alike during the company's annual meetings. Tesla has also faced lawsuits brought by shareholders including one with just 9 chairs who sued and won a case to cancel Musk's 2018 pay package. The CEO's pay package was reinstated on appeal late last year. The automaker later re-domiciled its Texas and issued new rules that limited lawsuits to major shareholders. Last year, Musk made the case that he needed more voting control at the automaker to feel comfortable building out its artificial intelligence capabilities. Otherwise, he said he feared the company being taken over by activist investors. I think my control over Tesla should be enough to ensure that it goes in good direction, but not so much control that I can't be thrown out if I go crazy, he said on Tesla's July earnings call. Musk said that the company studied creating super voting authority, but found that the only way to increase his control was to issue him more stock. Insider control. 6 months ago, he got what he asked for. Tesla shareholders approved a new pay package for Musk that could ultimately be worth more than $1 trillion. The package requires Tesla to hit certain targets, including sales of humanoid robots, and substantial growth in its network of autonomous vehicles. Compensation packages outlined in a SpaceX prospectus show Musk has been granted $1.3 billion in Class B shares that would vest in if he hits a series of transformative market cap goals, colonizes the planet Mars, and builds data centers in space. SpaceX described the performance goals as improbable. Still, Musk can already vote those shares, which contribute to his 85% control, and take loans out against them if the board approves. While Musk can't sell his super voting shares, he can pass vested shares and their voting power onto members of his family, including his children. Investors have mixed feelings about the structure. Some existing investors have said they don't mind giving Musk outside control because they want their financial interests to be aligned with his. Still, the proposed structure for SpaceX has drawn concern from corporate government experts. In a paper this week, Academiacs Lucille Bebcek and Kobe Castile argued that the governance structure could hurt SpaceX value in the long run, since Musk can sell down his financial stake while maintaining significant control over the company. Even fully accepting that Musk is currently by far the best person to have at the helm, this might not be the best case forever, Bebcek and Kessel wrote on the Harvard Law blog. Recent court case. The matter of control came up in Musk's recent court case against OpenAI. Musk sued the AI startup, arguing that it robbed a charity by converting into a for-profit after Musk donated $38 million. When he asked about his Tesla pay package on the stand, Musk said he wanted more control at Tesla to prevent a situation like the movie The Terminator, in which artificial intelligence is used for nefarious ends. A worst-case situation would be that AI kills us, I suppose, he said. In turn, OpenAI executive Sam Altman and Greg Brockman testified that Musk was motivated by control in his dealings with the AI company, too. The executive said that they negotiated with Musk to give him equity in a for-profit version of OpenAI, but that he said would be only accept if he had control over the company. On Monday, a jury threw out the case, finding it was outside of the structure of limitations. Musk said he would file an appeal. U.S. mortgage rates reach a nine-month high, by Nicole Friedman. Mortgage rates this week rose to the highest level since August. More bad news for home shoppers during what is usually the busiest time of the year for home sales. The average rate on a 30-year fixed mortgage rose to 6.51% this week, from 6.36% last week, Freddie Mac said Thursday. Higher mortgage rates and expensive home prices are keeping many would-be buyers on the sidelines. Rising costs in many places for home insurance and property taxes have also spooked buyers. Mortgage rates dipped below 6% in February, boosting expectations for a busy spring after three straight years of lackluster activity. The war in Iran and subsequent rise in oil prices have led to worries about inflation and dampened expectations for the spring home buying season. Existing home sales were flat in April, well below economics expectations. Each uptick in rates narrows the pool of buyers who can make the numbers work, said Anthony Smith, senior economist at Realtor.com, which is operated by News Corp, parent of the Wall Street Journal. Even a small change in mortgage rates can affect a buyer's purchasing power. A buyer with a $2,500 monthly budget and a 20% down payment can afford to buy roughly a $400,000 home at a 6% mortgage rate, according to real estate brokerage Redfin. With a 6.5% rate, that same buyer can afford a $384,000 home. Mortgage rates are still lower than they were a year ago. Mortgage applications for home purchases fell last week compared with the previous week, but rose 8% year over year, according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. Studies suggest diet drugs stall cancer. GLP-1 treatments linked to slower tumor growth. More research is needed, by Xavier Martinez. The world's most popular weight loss and diabetes drugs are linked to a powerful new possible benefit, better outcomes for cancer patients. Four new studies suggest that the people taking so-called GLP-1 drugs like Novo Nordisk, Ozempic, and Eli Lilly's Mounjaro saw reductions in tumor progression, lower overall chance of death, and less risk of developing breast cancer. It's really proactive that they showed in several cancers that people who took these drugs seem to have a lower risk of their cancer returning, said Dr. Jennifer Legible, a breast oncologist in Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, not involved in the studies. One study from researchers at the Cleveland Clinic Cancer Institute tracked more than 10,000 patients with early stage cancers who started GLP-1 drugs after their diagnosis and compared their disease progression to those on different diabetes medication. Those on the GLP-1s were less likely to see their cancer spread. In lung cancer patients, the rate of progression to advanced disease was cut roughly in half, 10 to 10% in GLP users versus 22% in the comparison group. Breast cancer patients showed a similar pattern with progression rates of 10% versus 20%. Colorectal and liver cancers also showed statistically significant reductions. Given millions of Americans are on GLP-1s, it's obviously quite important that we immediately understand what the potential anti-tumor effects could be, said Dr. Mark Orlin, a resident at Cleveland Clinic, who will present the study to the American Society of Clinical Oncology in an annual meeting this month. A cancer impact would add to the benefits that researchers credit to GLP-1 drugs. In addition to reducing blood sugar and spurring weight loss, they are approved for reducing the risk of heart attack and strokes, and in testing for helping with sleep apnea and dampening addictive behaviors. The drugs have also turned Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly into two of the world's most valuable drug companies. These studies were observational, which differs from studies of drugs' intended effects. Instead, people were already taking the drugs for diabetes or obesity, and researchers gleaned insights from medical records. More research is needed to confirm the results. Other studies specifically looked at breast cancer, examining both whether GLP-1 users were less likely to develop the disease and whether they live longer after diagnosis. An analyst from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center of more than 137,000 patients found that more than 90% of GLP users were alive after 5 years, compared with 89.5% for non-users. The University of Pennsylvania study of nearly 95,000 women undergoing breast imaging found that those who had taken GLP were about 25% less likely to be diagnosed with breast cancer, even after accounting for age, weight, and other such risk factors. We're seeing a signal across databases, which is certainly interesting because of all these studies have significantly slightly designs, said Dr. Jasmine Schumacher, a breast oncologist at UTMD Anderson Research, on its study. Scientists don't know why the drugs might be having this effect. One theory is GLP-1s reduce cancer risk indirectly by driving weight loss and improving metabolic health, each of which is linked to lower cancer rates. The other is more direct. Reporters for GLP, the receptors of GLP, the hormone these drugs mimic, appear on the surface of some tumor cells, raising the possibility that the drugs are acting on cancer biology itself. Neither Eli Lilly nor Novo Nordisk is studying the GLP drugs in relation to cancer. The researchers say these findings show an association, not causality. Randomized control trials, which assign patients by chance and more tightly control for differences in income, background health, and medical access, are what is normally used to determine whether the drugs themselves are driving the benefit. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal and the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. School official won't face charges in shooting, by Marsh Timms. A Virginia judge dismissed all criminal charges against a former elementary school assistant principal who was accused of negligence after a six-year-old student shot a teacher during class in January of 2023. Ebony Parker faced 8 counts of child neglect, one count for each bullet in the handgun brought to Richneck Elementary School in Newport News, Virginia, that day after the prosecutor said she failed to do enough to protect students, teachers, and staff. The case sought to break legal ground in testing whether an administrator can be held criminally liable for the actions of a school shooter. Judge Rebecca Robertson granted a motion to dismiss made by Parker's defense attorney, finding that the arguments made by prosecutors were legal theories, not a solid law on which to charge someone with a crime. If they are to amount to a crime, then the legislator would need to codify it, Robinson said from the bench Thursday, as Parker audibly sobbed. A 6-year-old first grade student armed with a 9mm handgun, legally purchased by his mother, intentionally fired one shot at his teacher, Abigail Zwerner, official said. The bullet went through Zwerner's hand and upper chest. A jury awarded her $10 million in November, finding the school administrators failed to take action despite repeated warnings that the boy had a gun. The boy's mother, Deja Taylor, pleaded guilty to state and federal charges related to the shooting. She was sentenced to 2 years in Virginia prison and for child neglect and to 21 months on the federal gun charges. The April 24 report from the grand jury that indicted Parker said the school repeatedly mishandled interactions with a child who had substantial disciplinary record. Big power plant fuels residents' air concerns. By Chris Maher and Jacqueline Jeffrey Wilinski. Thompson's, Texas, one of the fastest-growing counties in the nation, is also home of the biggest coal-fired power plants, the W.A. Parish Generating Station. The plant in Fort Bend County is the largest in Texas and can generate about 5% of the state's electricity. It also contributes air pollution in Houston and haze as far away as Arkansas. Now its towering stacks are fueling residents' concerns about the air they are breathing. It's hazy most of the time, said Sarah Roberts, a 49-year-old who lives east of the plant in Siena, a planned community whose website boasts amenities such as sports complex, amphitheater, and endless fresh air. From her plant-filled patio, Roberts said she often sees a brown haze and believes emissions have made her allergies worse. Newcomers to the area have posted, "Is there a fire going on?" she said. There's still a lot of people that have no clue. Last year, Parrish pumped out 36,000 tons of sulfur dioxide, 49% more than the prior year. Its emissions exceeded those in 43 states in 2025. The surge came amid rising power demand and a shift to coal as natural gas prices rose. Only one other U.S. plant, the Labadie Power Station in Missouri, produced more sulfur dioxide. The colorless gas can harm the respiratory system of sensitive individuals, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. NRG Energy, which owns the Parrish plant, said it takes environmental and safety compliance seriously, and the emissions are within permitted levels. Just west of the plant, a 4,700-acre community called Austin Point is under construction and projected to attract 50,000 new residents in 14,000 homes. A few dozen are finished and occupied. Mushtaq Messiah, 45, a software engineer, said he only started researching the plant after moving in March to a five-bedroom house with his wife and two sons, ages 8 and 3. The first thing he saw online was a 2018 Rice University study that found the parish plant caused 178 premature deaths a year. The stats on the internet are very scary, Messiah said. He is still happy with his home's $421,000 price, he said, but might have explored other options had he known about the plant. Another homeowner, Jonathan Gonzalez, 38, who owns a restaurant cleaning business, said his real estate agent told him about the parish plant. He isn't worried. I think I moved it to the right place. Parish began generating electricity with natural gas in 1958 and operated in rural anonymity when Fort Bend County's population was 40,000. It started adding coal units in the late 1970s. Only one from 1982 was required by federal law to include sulfur dioxide controls, known as scrubbers. Today, the county has ballooned to nearly a million residents, and the parish complex spans 4,664 acres. Three of its four coal units don't use scrubbers. Nationwide, sulfur dioxide emissions have plunged over decades as coal plants switched to natural gas, added scrubbers, or closed. Still, Parrish and a handful of other plants remain top producers of sulfur dioxide, according to a Wall Street Journal analyst of years of EPA data. The EPA, during the Obama and Biden administrations, tried to use a rule regulating haze in natural parks to require Parrish and other power plants to reduce sulfur dioxide emissions, potentially by adding costly scrubbers or shutting down coal units altogether. The changes were never completed. Meanwhile, the Trump administration, amid other moves favoring the use of coal, has said it won't pursue such regulations. NRG said regional haze is generated by many sources. Today, about 15% of coal units in the U.S. have no sulfur dioxide controls, according to Energy Information Administration data. Units that have the technology remove more than 90% of sulfur dioxide before it reaches the atmosphere. The idea that we still have Parrish and a few other power plants without scrubbers is mind-boggling, said Danielle Cohen, an atmospheric scientist at Rice. He wrote, "The premature death study, which was based on 2015 data that year, Parrish emitted 42,689 tons of sulfur dioxide, about 16% more than the last year." NRG said it's familiar with the study and takes community health research seriously. It said Parrish operates within regulatory limits informed by extensive scientific review. Matt Pistner, president of NRG Wholesale, oversees 36 power plants and says safeguards are in place. Touring Parrish, he pointed to pollution controls for mercury, nitrogen, oxide, and fine particle matter, investments totaling hundreds of millions of dollars. Parrish, which has 350 employees and between 100 and 600 contractors on site daily, is needed to support an overstretched power grid, he said. At full capacity, Parrish can power a million homes. About two trainloads of coal arrive daily from Wyoming, and workers tend to stockpile around the clock to keep it from catching fire. At one coal-burning unit, emissions from mercury, nitrogen oxide, and sulfur dioxide were well under permitted levels according to an hourly 24-hour measurement on a computer screen. We will not go after a dollar or a megawatt and put our compliance or anyone else's safety in harm's way, Pistner said. We have a relentless pursuit to stay in compliance. Local groups such as the Fort Bend Environmental and Air Alliance Houston have tried to raise awareness and lobby for a regulatory air monitor. Sarah Hay Garcia, 49, a nurse in Richmond, volunteered to let University of Texas researchers install an air monitor next to her rose bushes in her backyard. We want to find out what we're being exposed to, she said. Freddie Newsom, Jr., mayor of Thompson since 1999, supports the plant and said he has rarely, if ever, heard complaints from its 136 constituents. Thompson's municipal building, powered by solar panels, has a photograph of a handwritten sign recording the 1979 vote to incorporate 59-1. Newsom said leaders wanted to keep neighboring towns from capturing parish's tax revenue. Today, that is about $350,000 a year and keeps Thompson's debt free. That's our money maker, so I feel good about it, he said. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal and the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. In U-turn, Democrats release report critical of 2024 mistakes. Management of the election autopsy has been embarrassment to national chairman. By John McCormick and Tarini Parti. The Democrat National Committee on Thursday released an incomplete and critically annotated report detailing the party's mistakes in the 2024 presidential election, reversing course and plans to bury the document after pressure from activists and elected officials to share it. Management of the party autopsy has been an embarrassment for DNC Chairman Ken Martin, who pledged a full review and public report when he was elected in February 2025. He reversed his position, however, in late 2025, and she said releasing a document would be a distraction ahead of this year's midterm campaign. The 192-page document highlights issues specific to the 2024 cycle, both presidential and down ballot, as well as other structural party challenges. Its release was reported earlier by CNN. The document includes a disclaimer that says it reflects the views of the author, not the DNC. The note also says the DNC wasn't provided with the underlying sourcing, interviews, or supporting data for many of the assertions, and that the National Party can't independently verify them. In a statement, Martin took ownership for a failed process. When I received the report late last year, it wasn't ready for prime time, not even close. And because no source material was provided, it would have meant starting over, he said. I could not, in good faith, put the DNC stamp of approval on a report that was produced. Martin said he didn't want the report to create distraction for a party after recording significant wins late last year. By not putting the report out, I ended up creating an even bigger distraction, he said. For that, I sincerely apologize. For full transparency, I am releasing the report as we received it, in an entirety, unedited and unabridged. It does not meet my standards, and it won't meet your standards, but I am doing this because people need to be able to trust the Democratic Party and to trust our word. A source familiar with the process fault the methodology for what reviewed as an incomplete report by Paul Rivera, an informal senior advisor to the DNC who led the process and was unpaid for his work. The source said there was no consistent set of questions or approaches used, no notes taken for some interviews, and the deadlines for the project were repeatedly blown. Rivera didn't respond to a message seeking comment. In the document, Rivera suggests Democrats have lost voter confidence and trust. In the face of misinformation and disinformation, our candidates have proven incapable of projecting strength, unity, and leadership, and voters have drifted away, he wrote. Since former President Barack Obama's first White House victory in 2008, Rivera wrote, Democrats have lost ground at every level of government. These losses are the direct result of missed opportunities to invest in our states, counties, and local parties and candidates, he wrote. Several Democrats who worked for former President Joe Biden and former Vice President Kamala Harris described the report as a disaster, saying everything related to it, from the process to the actual document, had been an embarrassment and perpetuated the narrative of a party in disarray. Some also said Martin had lost trust in the Democrats, who should have stepped down. Controversy over the report also added fuel to the party's internal debate over whether it should become even more progressive or strive to do more to win the centrist voters. No wonder the chronologically online, highly educated, left-leaning team at the DNC wanted to bury the report, said Jonathan Cohen, president of the group called Third Way that is trying to push Democrats more to the middle. Democrats must be able to win the middle anytime, anywhere. They can do that only with the combative centrism that rejects identity politics, reclaims the vital center, and positions the party as fighters on the economic issues and matter most to voters. Roots Action, a liberal group that pushed for the report's release and protested outside a recent DNC meeting, slammed the document and questioned Martin's leadership. In a hasty, almost amateurish markup, the DNC has gone out of its way to poke holes in the legitimacy of the very report it commissioned, the group said in a statement. The report is full of factual errors, poorly supported conjecture and misguided ramblings, many of which the DNC itself is eager to point out. The cloud over the report was one of the reasons party donors have been skeptical about sending money to the DNC. Through April, the National Committee had $14.4 million in the bank, not counting the $17.5 million in debt. That compares to almost $124 million in reserves for the Republican National Committee, which has the fundraising advantage enjoyed by a party with control of the White House and both congressional chambers. Delivering a critical review on the electoral defeat is a politically delicate job because it involves finding fault with the work and decisions of the top party leaders, politicians, and strategists. It is especially challenging for Martin, who has faced party infighting and financial challenges. Martin started his tenure with a deflated Democrat base and a U.S. electorate that views his party more unfavorable than any other time in recent history. His selection came after Democrats lost the presidency and the Senate majority. His four-year term runs through 2029. Martin has spent recent weeks visiting potential 2028 National Convention host cities and other DNC officials ahead of his selection next year. Tobacco firm donated before vape curbs eased. By Laura Cooper and Meredith McGraw. Reynolds American, one of the biggest tobacco companies, made a $5 million donation to a political group aligned with President Trump's shortly before his administration decided to lift restrictions on certain flavored vaping products. Donation to MAGA Inc., the Super Political Action Committee aligned with the president, was recently disclosed in a federal fundraising records. It arrived on April 30th and was early reported by the New York Times. Reynolds, the maker of Camel and Newport cigarettes in the U.S., declined to comment. White House spokesman Kush Desi said the only guiding factor behind the Trump administration's health policy is gold standard science. FDA's regulatory treatment of nicotine pouches and vapes is rooted in recent evidence that has found they can help adults quit smoking. Alex Pfeiffer, a spokesman for MAGA Inc., said the group is pleased to accept legal contributions from those who agree with President Trump's America First agenda and his goal to make America great again. Republicans widely expect a difficult time in November's midterm elections, and many think they will lose control of the House. The Senate remains more competitive. The GOP plans to leverage its deep pockets to finance a barrage of ads, as well as far-reaching voter contact turnout operations, the Wall Street Journal previously reported. As of last week, MAGA Incorporated had about $347 million. One recent battle inside the administration merged over former FDA Commissioner Marty Marquez's handling of flavored vapes, which advisors told Trump was essential to retaining youth MAGA voters. On May 5th, the FDA authorized menthol, mango, and blueberry vape flavors from a Los Angeles-based manufacturer, GLAS. Marquez resigned the following week after Trump signed off on a plan to fire him. The Journal reported that before the vape decision, Trump upbraided Marquez for not moving quickly enough on the matter. Reynolds is one of the biggest sellers of vaping products under its Voss brand. Since 2020, the FDA has restricted sales to tobacco-flavored and menthol-flavored vapes amid concerns that fruity flavors appeal to the younger users. Airbus, Air France are found guilty in fatal 09 crash. By Benjamin Katz. Airbus and Air France have been found guilty of the involuntary manslaughter of 228 passengers and crew 17 years after what remains the worst aviation disaster in France's history. A Paris appeals court on Thursday ordered each company to pay a $260,600 fine. The penalty is the maximum for corporate manslaughter in France. The court sided with the public prosecution, which argued that negligence by the plane maker and airline had undeniably contributed to the crash of flight AF447 over the Atlantic in 2009. The ruling is the latest twist in a long-running legal saga that began in March 2011, when criminal charges were filed against Airbus and Air France. After several hearings and appeals, a full retrial was held late last year, leading to Thursday's ruling. Air France and Airbus said they would file appeals with the France's Court of Cassation, its highest court, citing earlier rulings that they acquitted them of guilt. Air France said it is aware that its decision to appeal prolongs what has already been a lengthy process, particularly for the families. From the outset, Airbus has pursued a constant objection to understand the facts, to seek the truth, to draw all necessary lessons, and to act responsibly to continue improving aviation safety, the company said. The verdict marks a rare finding of criminal liability against an airline or plane after a fatal aircraft crash. By contrast, the U.S. Justice Department last year struck a deal to spare Boeing from a felony conviction after the manufacturer pleaded guilty to having deceived air safety regulators about a flawed flight control system on the 737 MAX jet. The flaw caused two separate planes to take fatal nosedives, leading to the deaths of 346 people. In the case of the AF447, the French court found that the Airbus had long known that a critical airspeed sensor on the A330 jet was prone to freezing and underestimated the risk that it posed. Air France was found guilty for failing to provide significant safety training for pilots. The aircraft, an Airbus A330 widebody, was en route from Brazil to Paris when a jet's pilot's tube, which is used to determine airspeed, iced over, facing repeated stall warnings and wildly fluctuating airspeed readings. The pilots responded by pulling up the nose on the plane, causing its speed to drop and the aircraft to stall, French investigators found. The pilots then couldn't recover control of the plane. The wide body plummeted into the Atlantic Ocean, killing all 216 passengers and 12 crew. It took nearly 2 years to find the wreckage. Airbus shares slipped Thursday as a report that the aerospace group told airlines to expect delays in deliveries of its A350 aircraft later this decade. The stock fell 4.3%, even as peers like Safran and BAE Systems gained. Airbus said it doesn't comment on delivery timelines. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal and the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Walmart says shoppers stressed. Retailer reports higher sales but worries about impact of fuel prices. By Sarah Nasser. For the first time since 2022, Walmart shoppers filled their tanks with an average of less than 10 gallons a trip at its gasoline stations. That's an indication of stress, said Chief Financial Officer John David Rainey in an interview. The headline, consumer is reasonably healthy, but when you look underneath, the pressure is uneven. The retailer on Thursday reported strong sales growth in the most recent quarter and noted that rising fuel prices could draw more cash-strapped low-income shoppers. In this environment, Walmart plans to keep prices low to grab share, but could lift prices later if fuel costs stay high, he said. The company has largely left its financial expectations for the rest of the year unchanged. That was a disappointment for some investors, who sent shares down 7.3% on Thursday, its biggest percentage drop since 2023. The retailer was the worst performer on the Dow Industrial Average. The company said that higher tax refunds to shoppers in most recent quarter likely muted some of the impact of higher fuel costs on its results. Meanwhile, higher income shoppers are gravitating to Walmart's fast online delivery services and more premium selection in categories such as fashion and beauty, said Rainey. The dynamics pushed Walmart sales higher. The U.S. comparable sales, those from stores and digital channels operating for the last 12 months, up 4.1% in the 3 months ending May 1st from a year earlier. Sales rose in its major segments and online, the company said. It is a familiar pattern for Walmart. The retailer has often benefited in times of economic trouble as shoppers look for bargains. Consumer sentiment in the U.S. has fallen to record levels in recent months as higher gasoline prices have exacerbated shoppers' concerns about the economy, but wage and employment figures have held strong. The national average price of a regular gasoline is now $4.56. According to an AAA, a sharp rise from $3.18 a year ago. Rainey said the company's full-year sales would land in the upper end of the earlier expectations of a 3.5 to 4.5% increase. The company said that for the current quarter, it expects sales to increase by 4% to 5%. It said earnings would be between 72 and 74 cents a share, slightly below analyst expectations. Analysts said some investors see Walmart's recent success as an already reflected in its stock or hope for higher full-year estimates. The stock was up 17% this year through Wednesday. Walmart's results add to a string of sales growth figures from retailers in recent days, while executives say they are watching the macroeconomic environment carefully for changes. On Wednesday, Target reported its first solid quarterly sales lift in years. Under new chief executive John Furner, who took the helm earlier this year, Walmart has continued to push to grow faster through some of its newer businesses, such as online delivery and advertising. Earlier this year, Walmart lost its crown to Amazon.com as the country's largest company by annual revenue. On Thursday, Walmart said its e-commerce sales, which include advertising revenue, grew by 26% in the most recent quarter, pushed higher by its growth of its advertising business and third-party sales online. Globally, e-commerce sales represent nearly a quarter of Walmart's total sales. Net revenue rose 7.3% to $177.8 billion in the most recent quarter. Walmart has filed for a tariff refund, Rainey said, but doesn't expect a massive windfall from the effort. The company estimates that it paid around $2.4 billion in tariffs that the Supreme Court deemed illegal. He said less than 1% of last year's U.S. sales. Walmart said higher fuel prices increased the value of its inventory and they are into profit as transportation costs to stock stores and delivery online orders rose. Those costs were offset by higher sales and bigger gains from its non-retail businesses such as advertising, the company said. Net income grew nearly 19% to $5.3 billion in the most recent quarter. Construction spurs Deere sales by Nicholas G. Miller. Deere posted higher fiscal second quarter sales as growth in the company's construction equipment business helped to offset weakness in its production of agriculture segment. The company reiterated its fiscal year guidance for net income of $4.5 billion to $5 billion. Shares fell 5.2% to $531.35 in trading on Thursday. Deere said it recorded a recovery of $272 million from tariff refund claims accepted by the U.S. Customs and Border Protection after the Supreme Court struck down President Trump's emergency tariffs in February. For the quarter, the company posted net income of $1.77 billion or $6.55 a share, compared with $1.8 billion or $6.64 a share the year prior. Analysts polled by FactSet held expect a $5.70 a share. Net sales and revenue rose 5% to $13.37 billion. Wall Street had expected $12.73 billion. Net sales for the company's production and precision agriculture business fell 14% to $4.5 billion. Deere has struggled from an extended slowdown in the tractor business, with farmers cutting back on big-ticket purchases amid elevated interest rates and a challenging farming market. Meanwhile, construction and forestry sales rose 29% to $3.79 billion, and small agricultural and turfs saw net sales increase 16% to $3.49 billion. In February, the company said it was seeing a continuing recovery in demand in both segments. And now it expects construction and forestry net sales to be up 20% for the fiscal year, up from a prior forecast of 15%. It maintained its outlook for small agricultural net sales to be up 15% and production agricultural sales to be down 5% to 10% for the fiscal year. As we address ongoing challenges with global agricultural markets, our comprehensive portfolio continues to drive market share expansion and support our targets for sustained growth, said Chief Executive John May. Victoria's Secret Bears Sexier Stock Ticker by Susan Kapner. Victoria's Secret wants to get sexier. Even its stock's ticker is getting in the act. The company announced Thursday that it would soon start trading under a new ticker symbol, VSXY. It is part of a push by Chief Executive Hillary Super to usher in what she calls a new era of sexy for the brand. VSXY is a marker who we are today, Super said. A company standing fully on our identity and committed to inspiring confidence, sparking joy, and celebrating sexy in all its forms. The company has been rolling out new products under its Very Sexy line, including double push-up bras and more padding to provide an extra volume and lift. But it isn't returning to its past image, which some people considered inappropriate and off-color by focusing too much on idolized images of beauty. Today's Victoria's Secret is more inclusive. It is also more comfortable. Super has said women don't have to forego comfort to be sexy. Its Flex Factor bra has an underwire that is encased in fabric to make it more cushioned against the skin. Victoria's Secret is hardly the first company to try to convey its brand image through its ticker symbol. Anheuser-Busch InBev trades under a ticker Bud, a nod to its alcoholic Budweiser brand. Pet retailer Petco Health and Wellness trades under Wolf. The amusement park chain Six Flags Entertainment uses Fun, while arcades restaurant operator Dave & Buster Entertainment is Play. Victoria's Secret's current ticker, VSCO, is a nod to its full corporate designation, Victoria's Secret & Co. The company said it would begin trading under the new ticker symbol in New York Stock Exchange on June 2nd, and a letter posted to Victoria's Secret's website, Super, said the feeling sexy matters to women, but sexy is not a single look, a single moment, or a single definition. She said sexy is deeply personal feeling, and every woman will have a different perspective on it. Sexy has always been part of our DNA, she continued. What's changed is how intentionally we are owning it, not by telling women what sexy should be, but by reflecting it back to them in a way that feels authentic, expansive, and modern. You have been listening to a reading of articles and features From the May 22nd issue of the Wall Street Journal, we read from the Wall Street Journal every Monday through Thursday at 11 p.m. and Friday at 6 p.m. Your reader has been Donald. Thank you for listening.
Coming up next in the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, we have the Buffalo Criterion. At 8 o'clock, we have the New York Times. And at 9 o'clock, we have Discover Magazine. Stay with us for these readings and more. The following program is intended for listeners who are blind, have low vision, or have another print disability.